You're listening to C2Y Podcast. We bring you discussions on child and youth care that feature conversations with young people, parents, and professionals about the youth social service system. Introducing your host, Wolfgang Vachon.
Welcome to C2Y Podcast, discussions on child and youth care. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. Today, we're talking about advocacy. I'd like to start with a story. Early in my career, I used to teach a theater program at an alternative high school in Montreal. This was the only education option for most of the students there. They had been expelled or otherwise were not permitted to attend any of the other schools in the city. One day after class, I was taking the metro home. One of the students came running down the stairs, chased by two security guards. He ran onto the subway and then out the next set of doors, trying to outrun the guards. He didn't succeed. The guards caught him, banged him against the wall, forcefully pushed his head onto the ground, handcuffed him, and took him away as the metro pulled out of the station. The next time I saw him, I asked what had happened. He told me he'd jumped the turnstile and they chased him. He also told me he was charged with assaulting the guards. I had seen the whole physical engagement up until the point he was handcuffed, and there was no assault, at least not by him. I told him I was willing to testify to that in court. I spoke with his lawyer, I testified, and the judge dismissed the assault charge. This was the first time I understood how I could use my privilege and power as a service provider to be an advocate. Today, I'm joined by two guests who've done a lot of thinking, writing, and presenting on the topic of advocacy and child and youth care. Heather Sago and Aurora DeMonte are both faculty at Sir Sanford Fleming College in Peterborough, Canada, and they have started a project called the CYC Advocacy Project. Welcome, Heather and Aurora.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you both so much for joining us. Let's start with the CYC Advocacy Project. What is it?
Well, I guess it's a whole bunch of different things. And every time we explain it, it seems to take on a new description, I guess you could say. But what became the most apparent to us is that while advocacy appears important to CYCs, no one seems to talk very much about it. And so we began to wonder about the discomfort with this topic and where it comes from. And so we started to ask basically a threefold question. So one, what is advocacy? Just simply, what are some stories from the field? So we could start to understand what this looked like in everyday practice. And then we also wanted to explore the idea of professionalization of the field and how that relates to what our role looks like. And so the project itself is designed not to have any ownership, but rather really to belong to everyone. It's going to be an educational tool. We're not sure exactly of the methodology in terms of sharing, whether it will be in DVDs that can be distributed or through a website. But the idea is that it can be used for a variety of options for agencies, educational institutions, just to open the conversation as to what advocacy is, what it looks like, and just to continue to keep the conversation going. We are accepting video submissions, which has been our focus, but what we discovered along the way is not everybody wants to appear on camera, and other people have other ways of expressing their definitions of those three questions. And so we've began to also accept stories. We've had some creative arts expression submissions as well, and are quite open to however anybody wants to share their responses to those three or any other topics on advocacy that they'd like to see the door open on. Nice. And we'll be doing that until about August 2015, and then we'll take another year to put everything that comes together and produce that tool.
Great. Let's go through these questions. So just so I'm clear, the question number one was, what is advocacy? Question number two is around professionalization of the field. And question number three is what our role looks like. Do I have them correct?
Yes and no. I said this description seems to change every time. So really, the role, I guess, comes from the sharing of stories. So our question in the beginning wasn't so much as what is our role, but just tell us your stories. Hmm. But what emerged is that idea of what is our role as a CYC when it comes to this topic.
Great. Let's go back to question one. What is advocacy?
Well, that is a great question. What is advocacy?
One of the conversations we actually had with you, Wolfgang, mm-hmm. got us putting this together in some new language. And I can't really tell you what that language is because it's one that we haven't really come up with and would be a question for your audience, really. And that's that advocacy seems to take on a couple of different formats. So standing in front of, so doing for others. Ultimately, this would be in more of a crisis situation where someone is having difficulty acting on their own behalf. Another one is where you stand beside someone, where you're doing with them in conjunction, as an ally, as a support system. The other one would be standing behind, and that's where we start to teach to do for oneself so that the person can be their own advocate rather than needing another to do that, although advocacy is always perceived in the context of relationship, which we'll get into a little bit later. The other aspect is advocacy for self as a worker. So not just what we engage in with the children, youth, and families that we work with, but what about advocacy for ourselves in terms of making sure that it's not just the well-being of others, but our own well-being that we're considering during this process?
Let's go to this advocacy of as self for a moment. Why did you decide to include that as part of the conversation?
I think that it's really, like, if we're going to be able to do with or stand beside or behind, then we really have to be self-aware, right? We have to understand our own selves as well as our own place and role, position within society. And I think that advocacy and oppression are inherently linked. And so if we are not able to be critical and self-aware, then we're not able to recognize oppression as it's occurring. And so we're going to need to, like, so in order for us to be able to be advocates or to do some of that work, then we need to be able to be present and be aware of ourselves. Does that make sense?
It does. Makes mm-hmm. a lot of sense. You, in your answer, you talked about being with, being behind, being beside. You didn't mention being in front of. My sense is this is a bit of an evolution of our understanding of advocacy. There was recently a discussion on CYCNet around advocacy, and very much the discussion was centered on this idea of doing for. How has your own thinking shifted from this idea of doing for, doing with, and then supporting to sort of the individual to do for themselves?
I guess it's shifted because most of the conversations we've even had in previous trainings, you know, casual conversations with colleagues, has been all about that idea of the soapbox. Let's get on our soapbox. Let's say what we have to say on behalf of all these people who can't speak for themselves, which in effect is doing a disservice because we're actually practicing what we're preaching not to do, in the sense that that's kind of oppressing the very person that we're trying to assist. And so there seems to be confusion between, you know, advocacy as speaking for and advocacy where you're going to try and do with or teach to do for self. And I think part of that comes from the conflict we have in everyday practice, that the little things that we're doing and engaging in and just the way that we are with others can't possibly be advocacy because that soapbox isn't always there.
And what does the advocacy with the allyship, how does that play out in a real way? So let's imagine that, you know, one's working in a group home let's start with a group home. What might that look like, being an advocate with somebody in a group home context?
I think that inherently child and youth care practitioners are, like, our foundation in relational practice is a foundation in advocacy. And, you know, there's that genuine engagement and there's that genuine ability to step into that unknown and into that uncomfortability. So if we're really being present with another individual or a young person or a family, then we're able to to listen, and we're able to meet them where they're at, and we're able to really take into account histories, systems, etc., of what's going on in this person's life, and then focus on whatever their definition of well-being is, right? And I think that that's a big piece of this discussion about advocacy, is that, you know, many people focus on the rights, and absolutely rights are important, and that's we're not saying that it's that they're not, but that advocacy is more than just that, and that, or actually I should say that we're exploring the fact that it's more than just that, and that it really seems to take up the discussion, or the space of what is well-being, and what does well-being look like for an individual, and that is varying, right, for each and every one of us. And so, you know, in a group home setting, you know, it is going to look very different. And one of the questions that you talked about was, you know, how do we advocate within relationships and within systems and within institutions, and who are we really working for or with? And ultimately, it comes down to the young person.
So sometimes those systems are in tension. And, you know, the young person wants something that's different. So let's give a not uncommon example. Young person comes into relationship with us because the parent says, you know, my child is doing drugs. My child is flunking out of school. I love my child. I don't want my child to damage their brain or their body. I don't want them to be kicked out of school, to be expelled, because I know what the outcomes of that might look like. Mm-hmm. And so we start working with this young person. Young person says, I don't have a drug problem. Everyone has a problem with me doing drugs. I like doing drugs. It's my escape. It's what gives me pleasure in my life. I hate school. And we were caught in this situation where we say, okay, well, there's, you know, this young person wants one thing. Their parents want something else. The law says something else. How do we answer to all those different needs in those situations?
I think that we don't necessarily answer everyone. So there's the idea that advocacy is about going against a system. I'm not so sure that we should really consider the system, because what we're working with is the best interest of a child's needs. The system itself does not have any needs. It's like a tool or some kind of machine, where really this is about, you know, partnering with someone where they're at. So as much as anybody might want different things, even for myself, if I don't want those same things, no one necessarily has the power to change me. We can only be in relationship with others and be present and provide opportunities for people to reflect on what's going on for themselves. And so you have to start where the person is at. And that has to be your focus, not all the other pieces that come into play. Those are pressures that you face. Pressures aren't necessarily going anywhere, but you have to start where that person is, or the movement will not happen, because they are really the ones in charge of who they are and where they're headed.
So you, Heather, work in a correctional facility, justice system. How do you be an advocate with young people in a system that is explicitly designed to remove their freedom?
I guess that's what I would say is my struggle every day, and not my day, because again, I see it as a pretty simple answer. This is about a child, a youth, and in some cases their families as well. And it's about addressing the needs that are underlying their behaviors. It's not really about the law or what's taking place. It's this idea that Jim Anglin presented on pain-based behavior, and trying to find out what's happening in that person's world. And as much as there are tons of pressures from, whether it be a probation officer, a judge, a court support worker of some kind, everyone has their ideas about where that youth should go and how they should go and how they should do it. But only a few people will stop and actually ask the youth their opinion and include them. And I think that's that idea of standing beside is opening the door for a partnership conversation. So it's not that we neglect or don't address everyone else's concerns. We just do it in conjunction with the young person and ideally within direction from them, while acknowledging how other people see their situation so that it's a true partnership amongst not just service providers, but also with the youth themselves. So for example, that situation that you talked about, you know, if the youth's not ready to stop using, they're not going to stop using. But can you impact the safety of that youth while you're trying to identify what that pain is that lies underneath? And I think as you do that, then youth are more willing to look at some of the other perspectives that are there. But if they're not heard and seen as an equal or even as having power, then there's just going to be a tug of war that's going to take place instead. And so when I make plans, my plans are the youth's plans. I mention what everyone else would like, but what I emphasize and highlight and what I focus on in the work is what does the youth see as needing to take place? Because they are truly the expert in their own life. And I think that's the starting place.
And I think
Go ahead, Aurora.
That's part of the piece is that oftentimes when we think of advocacy, typically it's someone, like Heather said, you know, standing on the soapbox. And where is that young person's voice, right? And are they standing with me, right, and beside me, or am I utilizing, you know, taking ownership of something that's not necessarily mine, right? And so that piece of youth participation and youth engagement is really key in advocacy.
Have you had the opportunity to discuss these ideas with advocacy with young people as part of the CYC advocacy project?
That's one of the, in terms of as part of the CYC advocacy project, that's really our focus over the next little while, actually, is to connect ideally on camera and through the creative arts with their thoughts on it. Now, both Aurora and I in our work have believed that youth participation should be a big part of what we're doing, if not the highlight of what we do. And I think most of the conversations we both seem to have, as we were talking about this just before we got on with yourself, we were talking about how often youth may be listened to, but their voice is not necessarily heard and no actions resulting. And so youth will often tell us, well, I am an advocate. I speak up all the time for myself, but no one is listening. And so the question becomes, well, why is no one listening? Does it have to do with perhaps presentation? Does it have to do with willingness to see the youth as part of the process? Or, you know, why is that voice seemingly missing, or at least felt to be missing on their behalf? And many of them want to be more involved as well. So what we're looking for in the CYC project is their stories of when did they see this happening? When did they feel that they weren't just listened to, but heard and action taken in a direction in which they were comfortable with? And perhaps that action was their own and not always someone else's.
Do you have a sense of when and why they're not listened to? And I'm thinking particularly from service providers, from CYC practitioners.
So when and why they're not listened to?
Yeah, Heather was saying that, you know, frequently they'll speak up and their sense is, I'm trying to advocate for myself, no one's listening, I'm not being heard. Do we know why that's happening?
I think that there's this fear about doing things differently, right? And so I often talk about, you know, so much of our work is about stepping into that uncomfortability and that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next. And that's a real relationship. And it's wonderful for that uncomfortability because that's where lots of really great learning really happens. But we're afraid to rock the boat, right? Like we're afraid to do things differently than what has been done before, because we don't know what the outcomes are going to be, right? And so, you know, there's a lot of barriers in relationship to advocacy, right? Like people are afraid of, you know, being judged or stigmatized or job loss or you know, a multitude of different reasons. And so, and this comes back to the piece of oppression and power within our systems and our workplaces. And so, but But I think that as practitioners, we need to come back to and think about, you know, that idea or the concept of being self-aware and really thinking about our practice in that, from that ethical foundation, and how are we engaging in practice, you know, and am I doing it in a way that is congruent with our standards of practice and in the best interests or best practices for the young person or family that's right in front of us sitting right here, right?
I think as we heard more about the stories as we've been doing the CYC advocacy, what's become really apparent to us in this sort of second year of our project is that people get quite embarrassed. And the embarrassment seems to come from a place of knowing they didn't do enough.
They being staff or practitioners.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And not that they needed to do it all, but just that they didn't necessarily do anything. And it's, again, like the fear that Aurora was talking about. So what will happen if I, one, do things differently? So we're not necessarily used to in our history of practice with children across any discipline, partnering with them on their plans and what they want to do. And what does that mean if, in terms of our own expertise, right? So to give others power, usually that means you also have to lose power. And are we really willing to lose power in order to create equality? We're willing to give it to others, but not necessarily always lose our own. I think what we get caught in there is then we leave the youth out of the picture. And when we do include the youth, then it comes back to ourselves in the sense of, well, if I do follow up on what they're saying, or I do challenge, or I do teach them to challenge, if I'm the creator of these challenges, then what kind of consequences are going to beseech me? And we heard many a story of practitioners who were consequenced or who lost a job or lost pay or reputation because they felt they assisted someone else within the context of relationship to obtain a state of well-being that required some sort of challenging to the system.
So what do we do then? Well, that perplexes and frightens me, because what I hear in that is young people try to stand up for themselves and they don't feel heard. Practitioners see an opportunity to stand up, and when they do, they're consequenced, which clearly sends a message to everybody else who works in that environment. This is what happens when you take on this role. And I will need to give up what little power I have as a practitioner to advocate for this person. So it really seems to me there's a whole lot happening to inhibit the role of a practitioner to be an advocate. How do we address that?
I think we address it individually, as opposed to always looking at addressing a system. Again, if we go back to the idea of the soapbox, it's not just about a soapbox. It's when I walk into my life, when I walk into my practice, regardless of which one of those two things I'm doing, I'm in relationship with others, I'm listening and hearing what they're saying, I'm trying to be genuine. And while I'm doing that, I'm self-aware of the fact that oppression exists when there's any sort of power differential, which really means that oppression exists within every single relationship anyone will ever encounter. And so if I'm aware of that, then I won't necessarily, you know, deny opportunities or exploit others. And I can take small steps to just be a different way and show people a different way of being, and hopefully welcome others into being in a similar fashion, but within their own unique way of doing so. And one of the things we've been doing is asking people just to log their daily life events in regards to advocacy. Where do they see that they stood in front of, stood beside, stood behind, or perhaps spoke for their own needs? Where is that occurring? What does it look like? What format is it taking? So that if we can better operationalize it in practice, then perhaps we'll be less fearful of it and more knowledgeable about how to limit potential consequences at the same time.
That's an exciting addition to the project. I would encourage all the listeners to try that. That's something that I think I'll try to do as well, to bring more conscious awareness to my own moments of advocacy or abdicating advocacy, as the case may be. How do we shift into the role of being behind and supporting and developing the skills for individuals to advocate for themselves in a way that they will be heard?
I think we take pause sort of and reflect at this point on how do we do that. I think the basics are always let's teach people about their rights, but I think it extends far beyond that. And I'll let Aurora hit a few of those points here.
Well, I also think that what we noticed in the project thus far is that, people feel really uncomfortable talking about advocacy, as mentioned before. And so there's a piece of embarrassment. And that in order for us to figure out the answer to that question is that we really need to have many more discussions. And again, coming back to that piece of self-awareness and ability to be open and honest with one another and to share some of those experiences and what worked really well and what didn't work. And it's from those moments when we're able to share that we can then say, okay, so this is what I might need to do differently, and be able to approach it with a little bit more clarity. But right now, I think we'd have to say that there's not a lot of discussion happening about it. And so hence the purpose of our project, right? Mm-hmm.
And I think that discussion needs to extend beyond practitioners, and it needs to extend to the youth about how can this happen? How can we have open, honest, bidirectional dialogue and partnership in ensuring needs of everyone for the purpose of well-being are accounted for? And we had a great example of that with one of our graduating students last year. She was within a school system and was challenged by the idea to log her advocacy daily events that were taking place for her. And what she discovered along the way is that within the school system, often children were faced with substitutes. And when those substitutes came in, they didn't necessarily understand the needs of the children in the same way as those people who were there on a regular basis. And so instead of creating her own idea about how to solve that problem, she just put it out there to the kids. And they had a fantastic idea about creating their own pocket-sized passport that represented their needs, and then they could use that passport to explain to just about anybody what it is they might need within the context of relationship in order to have their needs met. And it became just such a beautiful project that came alive, and the student she was working with really became invested in it. And the reason they became invested in it is because it was their own. It was not hers. It was something that they, brought to life. So yeah. Again, she was just there with them throughout that process, but really they did most of the work.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful example, particularly poignant, because it's about negotiating that space with adults. And it starts with a recognition of a problem as an adult potential ally, witnessing a problem, dialoguing with, and then having the young people identify the skills to do for themselves. It's such a nice, clear evolution of that. We're going to wrap this conversation up. I would really encourage people to go to the CYC Advocacy Project and look at ways that they can contribute. Before we end, are there other key points that I haven't created an opportunity for you to mention about this project or about advocacy in general?
I don't think so.
Great.
Hold on, Heather. What about you?
There's a quote that we got in doing our advocacy project from the late Mark Kruger, and I think it kind of sums up what we're talking about, or what we want to challenge people to do as they go into the year 2015, and that's, don't go into this field without being prepared to be an advocate for the work that you are doing. It is not a field in which you will stand by and let things continue to happen that seem detrimental to the well-being of the children.
Yeah, don't stand by. I think that's a really powerful image that I know I can certainly identify with times when I have stood by, and I can identify with the embarrassment or the shame that you mention of different people, moments when I could have but didn't say something or advocate. We've had many conversations over the past couple of years, and I've always appreciated those conversations, and I think the work that you're doing is really, really important, and I very much look forward to seeing how it continues to evolve and develop and enhance our work with children and youth. So thank you, Aurora. Thank you, Heather. And please, all listeners, go in and check it out and try doing a advocacy journal yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes this month's episode of C2Y Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher and visit us at c2ypodcast.org.